I want to welcome everyone to the fourth of six teleconferences for the Eat, Drink, and Be Merry course. Today we're going to be talking about staffing strategies, and toward the end we have a special guest from Jewish Home for the Aging who have been implementing the intervention Sandy's been presenting for quite some time, and so they'll talk a bit about that for us. And with that, Sandy, I will let you take it away with a reminder to please prompt us when you're moving on to the next slide. And one more thing, should anybody need to unmute your phone to ask a question, #6. And that's it, Sandy.
Okay. Thanks, Annie. Well, I feel like we have a lot to cover today in addition to the staffing strategies piece and our special guest from Jewish Home in Los Angeles. We also have some additional quiz questions to cover. So I'm going to go straight to the second slide, which is the objective slide. And our objectives today are twofold. First, to examine staffing resource strategies for nutritional care provision, both during and between meals, so mealtime feeding assistance as well as snack offers between meals, and also to review the federal paid feeding assistant regulation as it relates to staffing resources. The next slide, staffing ratios. The ideal ratios for direct care or nurse aide staff have been recommended at a ratio of 5 to 7 residents to 1 nurse aide during mealtime periods, so day and evening shifts basically. These recommendations come from both expert consensus panels such as the American Nurses Association, as well as evidence-based research studies showing a strong link between both licensed nurse staffing and direct care or nurse aide staffing and care quality across a number of different aspects of care, but including nutritional care. The next slide. Well, not surprising to many of the groups on this call, I'm sure everyone is well aware that most nursing homes do not have these recommended levels of staffing. And in fact, the typical ratio of residents to nurse aides is far from ideal. Just as a point of comparison, on the typical day shift, this is the 7 to 3 shift or the breakfast and lunch meals in most facilities. My experience is that the average ratio of residents to nurse aides ranges anywhere from 8 to 10 residents per nurse aide. And the evening shift or the dinner meal, that average jumps to 12 to 15 residents per nurse aide. Next slide. At least partially due to inadequate nurse aide staffing, mealtime feeding assistance care is often of poor quality based on objective research studies conducted by myself as well as other independent groups. Specifically, we've seen that residents rated by staff as in need of assistance on average receive less than 10 minutes per resident per meal. This includes residents rated on their most recent MDS as requiring feeding assistance, as well as those with a history of unintentional weight loss. We also see that independent residents who eat poorly typically go unrecognized by staff and therefore get little to no staff attention during meals to address their poor intake problems. And overall, we see very little social interaction or verbal cueing or offers of alternatives to the served meal. And these are all things that, as we've talked about in previous sessions, that most residents can benefit from during meals. So this just gives you more specific examples of how nurse aid staffing impacts the quality of mealtime feeding assistance care provision. The next slide. When we talk about staffing ratios, in particular at the nurse aid level and for feeding assistance care provision, one of the things that I've tried to address in my work is really to quantify how much the nurse aides are responsible for typically during meals. And when you think about it, they're really responsible for a host of different tasks during mealtimes that preclude them from really being able to focus on providing, feeding assistance. I mean, that's far from the only responsibility that they have. Oftentimes, the nurse aides are also responsible for meal tray delivery, setup, and pickup for all the residents that they're assigned to. Sometimes kitchen and dietary staff help with that, but in most places, I've seen the nurse aides are actually the ones, taking the trays to the residents and doing any initial setup and then picking up those trays at the end of the meal. Obviously, that's something that all residents need, not just those who are who also need assistance. Nurse aides are also typically the one doing documentation of percent eaten values. Again, that's for all the residents that they're assigned to. If a resident is going to get an alternative to the served meal, the nurse aide is typically the one that has to disrupt their work process and actually go and, go to the kitchen and request it and retrieve it and bring it back to the resident. They also have other care activities that they have to provide during the meal that competes with their ability to provide good quality feeding assistance. They're still answering call lights. They're, providing incontinence care as needed. There's other things that are happening. Not everything else stops just because, just because meals are served. And usually, even when it comes to the between meal delivery of supplements or other foods and fluids from the kitchen, it is, again, the nurse aides who are typically given this responsibility. Some facilities do have hydration techs, which are usually nurse aides who are passing fluids between meals. But and if there is, in fact, any documentation of these additional foods, fluids, and supplements between meals, then, again, the nurse aide is responsible for that, too. Next slide. So, given, the direct care staffing resource limitations that exist in most facilities, really, you have a couple of different options. And again, these are things that we've tried to address in the research that we've done. One is to target your feeding assistance care provision to the residents who most need it, not only who most need it in terms of poor intake, but who are most responsive to the assistance when it's given. Second is to group residents together for care provision. I've alluded to this before, seating multiple residents together at the same table who need different types of staff attention during meals, and similarly grouping residents together between meals for snack provision. And third, utilizing non-nursing staff for some tasks. Slide number 8, the next slide, related to targeting feeding assistance. This is what we've tried to address in previous sessions. You could either target based on their current intake consistently falling below 50%, which you can, get at based on just your straightforward meal observations, what we talked about in the first session. You can also use other clinical criteria, such as, having a body mass index of less than 21 or a history of unintentional weight loss. Irrespective of whether or not that previous weight loss has met MDS criteria, if this is somebody who's kind of showing a gradual, slow decline in terms of their weight, then they probably need attention.
So that's even for the second floor people.
Even if they haven't had an episode that has met criteria per se. And then a second way, really critical in terms of targeting, is how responsive they are to assistance. So this is where those two-day trials of mealtime assistance or between meal snack offers come into play. There's no point in exhausting your staff's time and effort trying to provide mealtime assistance to someone who is really not going to eat or drink substantially more, even if they got that additional attention. And similarly, there's no point in offering additional foods and fluids between meals to residents who are not responding to that. So the two-day evaluations the meal evaluation, the snack evaluation that we talked about in previous sessions really help you to hone in on who should your staff be focusing on during meals and who should you be focusing on between meals. The grouping residents together for care provision, this seems like a straightforward thing, but it really doesn't happen very often. Our observations have shown that a substantial proportion of residents are allowed to eat breakfast and dinner in their rooms, and about half of the, half the residents eat lunch in the dining room. So clearly, if residents are being allowed to dine in their rooms or in hallways outside of their rooms, automatically, your staffing ratios have to be double or triple in order to provide, the amount of attention that you need to provide to all the residents who need it. I mean, it becomes an impossible task. So for residents who are nutritionally at risk, it's really important to get them to some type of common area so that your staff can attend to them in a more time-efficient manner. Similarly, with snacks, we found that organized social group activities offer a wonderful opportunity for kind of naturally having residents together in groups, and you can just add, snack offers on top of those activities. A lot of activities programs already offer foods and fluids during activities anyway, so it's kind of a natural extension. And it also gives you the addition of the social activities personnel staff to help with snack provision. So there's a lot of advantages in that regard. Even outside of organized social group activities, however, you can still bring multiple residents together for between meal snack provision instead of providing those on a one-to-one basis. And utilizing non-nursing staff for some tasks, this is relevant to the relatively recent federal feeding assistant regulation. I think I have some other, just briefly, I'll talk more about this regulation. We've actually done a few studies related to this regulation. Briefly, this regulation allows nursing homes to either hire single task workers or to cross-train existing non-nursing staff to help with feeding assistance care provision. And based on our evaluation studies, we found that this can be an extremely effective way to supplement your nurse aid staffing during mealtime, and these workers can be extended to between meal time periods as well. So it can really help to expand limited staffing resources, and it's something that is allowed at the federal level and also allowed by almost all states. I think there may be now only 4 states that don't allow this. So the goal, the next slide, slide number 9, the goal is really to, increase the staff you have available for nutritional care tasks beyond just your direct care nurse aid staff, because it really is impossible for them to do everything alone. Some of the things that we recommend in terms of other staff who can help is that licensed nurses obviously are in a position to provide supervision, help with task assignment, and they can also be really helpful in actually providing assistance or at least tips or guidance with those individual residents who, staff often will call the really difficult feeders. These are the residents who, who have maybe swallowing difficulties, who are refusing a lot. The licensed nurses can really be helpful in helping the nurse aides kind of work through what's going on with those residents and how best to manage them nutritionally. As I mentioned before, social activities personnel can be a wonderful augmentation to a snack program, as well as just kind of floating through the dining room and other common areas and providing socialization for all residents during the mealtime period. I've mentioned before, and this is really no small effect, that just the socialization and eating in a common area, that in and of itself has a beneficial effect for almost all residents during meals from a food and fluid intake, as well as a quality of life standpoint. So, you know, the importance of that really can't be minimized. As I also mentioned, kitchen and dietary staff in some facilities take responsibility for meal tray delivery and even some setup as well as pickup. And that is tremendously helpful for the nurse aides. It really is a huge time savings for them and allows them to focus on, you know, more so on feeding assistance care provision. Kitchen and dietary can also be really instrumental in making sure that alternatives to the served meal are readily available, and that there's they can make suggestions about, you know, maybe easier or more time efficient ways that those requests can be communicated, so that the nurse aide doesn't have to stop everything that they're doing and leave the floor and trek to the kitchen, which in some facilities can be pretty far away from residents' rooms and dining rooms, and, you know, request something and then wait for it. And some places will actually just go ahead and send some extra trays with the alternative to the served meal to the unit, so that they're readily available as a backup if a resident, you know, isn't eating well or doesn't like the served meal. So, again, it's easy access for the direct care staff. That's really the key. And any type of between meal hydration or snack program requires pretty extensive coordination with kitchen and dietary. You know, they need to know what to send, when to send it, where to send it, who's going to get it, and all of that has to be, you know, worked out between them and the you know, the unit staff. And that definitely takes some advanced planning and logistical considerations. We've also found that volunteers and family and other non-nursing staff can be really helpful in transporting residents to and from the dining room. Again, if you have multiple, you know, a pretty large group who eats in the dining room and they all need assistance getting there and then leaving afterward, it's a pretty significant chunk of time, and it's a lot of time that nurse aides spend when they could be focusing on feeding assistance care provision. Administrative and other staff, in addition to helping with transport, again, can also float through the dining room doing those simple verbal cueing and socialization. You know, greeting residents and, you know, chatting with them a little bit, asking how they like their meal that particular day, giving them some, you know, verbal cueing. Those are all very easy things to do. And then, you know, all of those things are things that really that other, you know, staff can do without any additional training. Separate from that, there's the option of actual trained feeding assistants per the federal regulations. And again, this is slide 10. The federal paid feeding assistant regulation allows training of non-nursing staff for feeding assistance care provision during or between meals, and it's allowed in almost all states. Slide 11, the requirements for the feeding assistant regulation, the federal requirements, is a state-approved training curriculum of at least 8 hours. Some states require more than 8 hours, but 8 is the minimum per the federal regulation. Training and supervision conducted by a licensed nurse. And residents who are assigned to these workers have to be considered without complicated feeding care needs. As I also mentioned previously, the CMS-sponsored studies that we've conducted showed that these types of programs were very successful in expanding the staffing resources during meals and improving nutritional care quality. And the licensed nurses and the nurse aides in facilities that had these types of programs were very positive about how beneficial the programs were and how it allowed them more time to help more residents because they had these other people coming in. And usually what we found is that these workers were assigned to individual residents who were very time-consuming to help. You know, they're really slow, dependent eaters that the nurse aides, you know, couldn't possibly spend, you know, 30-plus minutes providing assistance to. So they were very helpful in that respect. Slide 12, other staffing strategies that I want to mention, I mean, there are so many, and we've published a lot on this, and there's obviously a limit in terms of what I can touch on in just one of these types of sessions, but I can't emphasize enough how important it is to encourage residents, particularly those residents who you consider to be nutritionally at risk, to eat most of their meals in a dining room or other common area. Again, it allows for time-efficient care delivery in small groups. We found that the best ratio is, you know, seating 3 to 4 residents at the same table and assigning one staff member to sit at that table to provide various aspects of assistance to those residents. Eating in a common area is also associated with better nutritional care overall. There's more assistance, more socialization, as well as more accurate chart documentation of the resident's intake. It's also much more conducive to licensed nurse supervision. So for residents who are considered difficult feeders or high, you know, weight loss or dehydration risk or assigned to these trained feeding assistants staff, and maybe you have some concerns about that, then, you know, making sure that those people are in a common area, a licensed nurse supervisor can go to that one designated area and, you know, really capture a lot of information at one time, you know, for everybody. And it's also conducive to quality monitoring, which we'll be talking about the next session.
Sandy?
Yes.
I don't mean to, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to make sure we get in Ann and Susan, because they
sure.
may have to leave at 2:30. Should I bring them in now, do you think, or wait a little bit?
No, I think it's fine.
Okay.
You can go ahead and bring them in. I'd rather, you know, do it based on their schedule, because I can keep going. It doesn't really
matter. Yeah. They may have to leave by 2:30. I think
sure.
that they have already unmuted their phones. I want to take a minute to introduce Susan Leach and Ann LeClaire, who work in Southern California at the Jewish Home for the Aging in the L.A. area and have extensive experience implementing. A couple of years ago, they worked with Sandy to implement these interventions in their nursing home, and we brought them back here to talk a little bit about what worked well for them, what they might have tweaked to improve. Susan and Ann, I will let you take it away for, you know, 5 minutes or so.
Super. Hi there, I'm Susan. Ann LeClaire, can you hear me? Are you there?
What is her phone number? Ann, if I have muted you by mistake, would you please press star six to unmute? Now it's muted. I'm sorry.
You there?
I have you at 818. Is she in the 818 area code?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Great. This is Susan speaking, and Ann LeClaire, unfortunately, has been called off on an emergency.
Okay.
Am I being heard?
You are. You should assume you're being heard. I know it sounds strange.
Okay. I can tell you that we started this project with Sandra several years ago, and it has been very instrumental in keeping our facility from, we have really little to no weight loss in the Goldenberg-Zeiman building. When we implemented the program, we were doing meal assessments. Typically, it started at 75% consumption if the residents were eating more than we felt that they probably did not need the mealtime interventions. We needed to tweak that a little bit, so we were observing the resident at 50% and less. If we observed the resident upon 3 meals, and typically we like to do breakfast, lunch, and dinner, if we saw that the resident wasn't eating 50%, then we put them on the mealtime assistance program. Now this, again, with the nurse ratio, it's about 1 CNA to 4 residents, and we put the residents in with like-minded interests and behaviors and with special needs. with this mealtime intervention program, the nurses, again, engage the residents verbally at the table, where typically nurses have a tendency to talk about their own social engagements and what happens with them and their personal issues instead of addressing the residents. The focus in on the mealtime supervision with particular residents that are eating below 50%. We like to visit them about 3 times during the hour while they're in the dining room, asking them to eat a little bit more, try a little peas, have a little juice. With these types of interventions that not only the CNAs at that table give, but the floating activity staff that I have in there for social stimulation and verbal encouragement, that helps cue the resident to eat more. We also promote independence by engaging with the silverware and setup, so there's a process making sure that the setup is accurate from the moment you start the process so the resident is as independent as possible. With the snack programs in place, some residents are not receptive to the mealtime interventions. They don't like people looking over their shoulders or cueing them. We've gone into the snack program, where again, with weight loss at the residents below the BMI, we put them on our snack program, which is at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Sometimes we do it in a group setting in a dementia house. It can be difficult. If you offer a snack to a resident that has weight loss issues and you're surrounded by other residents who don't have weight loss issues, in fact, they may be overweight, they'll want goodies too. It's hard to say no to some and offer it to others. So that will be a facility process. But we have found this program to be very instrumental. We continue with the training process through our CNA mentors and still through supervision in the dining rooms with supervisors to assist. I hope that was helpful.
That was very helpful. Can you stay through the end of the call to answer questions if people have them?
I will do my best, yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So Susan will stay on. We'll return to our regular program, Sandy, and I think you're going to maybe touch on some of these things that Susan has already talked about a little bit.
Yes, thank you so much, Susan. I really appreciate your time. I know you're a very busy woman, and I'm delighted to hear that the program has continued and has continued to be successful in helping you all to provide the best possible quality of care. Jewish Home is an amazing place to be and work, and they just do an incredible job. So thank you for contributing today.
My pleasure.
So we were on slide 13, staffing strategies during meals. I don't want anyone to think that I am naive about some of the things that I'm recommending, because in any facility, these can be very real daily challenges. Simply saying that most residents should eat most meals in the dining room is no small thing. There's a lot of other care routines that have to happen in order to be conducive to people getting to the dining room for meals. For breakfast, you have morning ADL care. Some facilities have utilized night shift staff to start this care, so that it's not up to just the 7 a.m. shift coming on board. So that's one strategy to consider. There's the transport to the dining room, which I've also mentioned. That can be very time consuming on a given unit, and there's a lot of other non-nursing staff that can help with the transport. Space is a big limiting factor in a lot of facilities, especially older buildings. There's a lot of places that simply don't have a dining room that's large enough for all the residents to eat and simultaneously. So I've seen facilities do 2 seatings per meal so that, they can maximize the use of that space. Also, the utilization of day rooms or family meeting rooms, basically smaller areas that happen to have a table. Sometimes these are used for the more physically dependent or cognitively impaired residents who benefit from a quieter environment with not a lot of distractions going on. So thinking more creatively about other common spaces that might be available beyond just that sort of designated dining room area. And you can also take a larger dining room. I've also seen facilities set up dividers to kind of compartmentalize a large dining room into sort of smaller areas that can be more easily managed from a supervision and feeding assistance care delivery standpoint. But I'm also well aware that, you know, some residents have very strong preferences about where they dine and who they dine with. So sensitivity to their preferences in terms of table mates and other things is you know, obviously another concern. And you may not be able to coax them into sitting with other people who, you know, you also need to attend to if that's not where they normally sit. So these are all challenges that are going to vary from facility to facility, you know, depending upon your own, you know, your own physical layout and what types of areas you have available. As I mentioned before, slide 14, there are lots of ways that you can expand the role of staff facility-wide during meals with a whole lot less than an 8-hour training requirement. The mealtime tasks that require little to no training that most anyone could help with is the transport to and from the dining room and the provision of verbal cueing or general reminders to eat, as well as the socialization during meals. And mealtime tasks that require, you know, very minimal training would be the offers and retrievals of alternatives to the served meal, meal delivery setup and pickup, and percent eaten documentation. You know, these just require some modest training related to diet restrictions and diet orders and how percent eaten is estimated and documented in your facility. Some other recommendations that we have, slide 15, is we have found that it's really helpful, if at all possible, to designate someone as responsible for overseeing the dining room in general. And this is, you know, to attend to the how it's organized in terms of the tables and the seating, the atmosphere. Some facilities have gotten really creative about, you know, identifying residents who need additional attention with a different color napkin, or, as I mentioned before, kind of the dividers where you compartmentalize a large dining room into smaller, more manageable areas. Serving practices, you know, when things are done and how things are done, making sure kitchen and dietary aren't coming around, you know, too quickly to pick up trays when residents aren't really done yet. Making sure that the food that is delivered, it matches the person's diet order. We actually see on average a 10-15% error rate in terms of diet order versus what the person's actually given. Noise level is another big thing to attend to. Oftentimes in dining rooms, you'll have radios and televisions on at very high volumes, and really it's more so for the staff benefit versus the resident, and it interferes with the staff's ability to communicate effectively with the resident during meals. It limits their verbal cueing and socialization with the residents. And just kind of as an aside, when you're doing your initial meal observations where you're, you know, looking at the residents, you can easily notice these other things in terms of just kind of the general atmosphere of the dining room and other things that you might need to change about the meal service itself and the environment. For staffing strategies with snacks, you know, we've mentioned a few of these. It's really important to coordinate with the kitchen and dietary staff to make sure that you have both food and fluid snack choices available. You don't want the kitchen sending the same thing 2 or 3 times a day. The residents will tire of it and their intake will be poor. Their refusal rates will be high. That's why supplements tend to not work well. The residents, you know, tire of getting the same thing over and over again, as most of us would. So you want to work with the kitchen and dietary staff to make sure they're sending a variety of options. Ideally, you'd like to be able to offer residents a choice during each snack opportunity, but if you can't offer a choice within each snack opportunity, then you can just at least work with the kitchen so that they're varying what they're sending to the floor. We do recommend offering between meal snacks at least twice a day. Susan mentioned that they focus on the 2 o'clock and the 7 o'clock. Morning, afternoon, and evening is ideal, but, you should start with whatever makes the most sense and whatever's easiest. Even if you're just starting with once a day, that's better than none. Focus on when it's going to be most feasible for you in terms of when you have the most staff available who could help. We've historically found that intake is higher during the morning and afternoon snack sessions relative to evening, but again, that can vary from facility to facility based on, the residents within that facility. So you can kind of make your own determination about which snack periods work the best. And a lot of facilities now have hydration techs who will go around and offer fluids between meals to all residents. And this is a great program to have. And if you happen to already have one or two staff designated as hydration techs, one option might be to consider just simply expanding the options on their cart from not just fluids, but also some small snack food items that they could also offer to the residents as they're offering fluids. Slide 17. I think I've mentioned most of these already. The only one I'll just mention again is the reminder that offering residents a variety of snack options has, we've shown it to be more cost effective than supplements alone, both from a caloric intake as well as a refusal rate standpoint. In addition to the cost of the items themselves, I mean, individual snack foods and fluids are actually less expensive than supplements. And the other two I've already mentioned. I guess we will, let me see how much time we have. We'll move to the assignment for this next month, or maybe, Annie, should I stop here for a minute to see if anybody has questions for Susan?
Why don't you do assignment, and then let's open it up, and we'll maybe postpone the quiz results. Does that make sense? Because once people unmute their phones,
Okay, sure. So the assignment for the next month would be to, of course, continue with your meal observations and your, as well as your meal and snack evaluations that we started in previous months. As you're doing meal observations, try to note kind of the number of staff who are present in the dining room or who otherwise might be potentially available to help with meals and thinking about some of the staffing strategies that we've talked about today. And also think about what your nurse aides in your facility are currently responsible for during mealtime. Are they responsible for all the things on that list, in the previous slides? And if so, then, you need to give some serious thought as to what other types of staff might be able to assist during and between meals and in what capacity. Each of those tasks require a significant amount of time. So nothing is too small for consideration. The more people who can help, the better. The next session will review a continuous quality improvement tool for nutritional care during and between meals to determine if residents in need of mealtime assistance or snacks between meals continue to receive it. So the purpose of your initial assessments and your evaluations is to identify those residents who actually need mealtime assistance or snacks between meals. And then the purpose of the CQI tool at a supervisory level is to make sure that, okay, once you've identified those needs, are residents consistently getting those things on a daily basis? And then I just mentioned some other resources here. The Vanderbilt website, of course, and within that website, there's a lot more information about the paid feeding assistant regulation, including an implementation manual with tips, training curricular resources, and a state-by-state summary of which states allow it and which states don't. So a whole host of information. it is sort of embedded in the larger website. So if you have trouble finding that information or if there's something specific that you're looking for relevant to your state, feel free to email me and I'll be happy to try to answer any questions you might have about that.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll stop there.
Yeah. Thank you, Sandy. We'll stop here. #6 to unmute your phone. And I know people tend not to do that. I want to really strongly encourage you to do that. #6. If you have any questions for Sandy or Susan, I know I have one for you, Susan, to perhaps start. How did you go about getting your staff on board? And what kind of process was that? And I know you had Sandy to help, so that was quite a leg up, but...
It was. To be honest with you, it was. It took myself as a community manager. I consider myself an extra staff member. It did take some training. We did work with our CNAs on a weekly basis. We brought them in for about 15 minutes into a small common area to talk about behaviors. We talked about the style, how to communicate with the resident during this process. We actually did filming. And then we took the film back into a private setting so they could observe themselves feeding these residents.
Hmm.
So we did several sessions on mealtime assistance training, how to communicate, how to offer substitutes. And we had to continue to meet on a regular basis to identify particular resident needs and behavioral issues so the CNAs could come together understanding, you know, what the outcome will be. So again, it's total focus on the four residents that are sitting around this table. So once we got the training process in place, so everybody was on board, because you're training two shifts. So it's not just the 3 to 11, you have to bring on the other folks on board and give them the same attention that you would on the day shift. Did that help to answer your questions? It is, it does take time and devotion. You have to be consistent and follow through.
Does it work to roll it out slowly? I mean, four residents at a time? With one nurse aide trained at a time? Can you?
No, we trained the group in half sessions. We couldn't pull everybody off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you have mentors. We have CNA mentors who train newcomers. We have a very little staff turnover in the Goldenberg-Zeiman building. After all of these years of 8 years in the building, people just don't leave. Why? Simply because support, encouragement, inclusion of solutions to resolve resident problems, because the CNAs take ownership of these residents.
Mm-hmm.
We did, though. I think, if I remember correctly, Susan, we started on one. That building has two floors, and we started the training and the program on one floor, and then extended it to the second floor a little bit later, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that might be an option for some facilities to consider. In terms of rolling it out, you don't have to think about this as something that you have to try to do facility wide from the get go. You could focus on, one unit, maybe the unit that has your highest weight loss problem, highest feeding assistant care needs problem, your dementia care unit where you're particularly concerned about, nutrition and hydration. You can start on one unit or one floor and then, extend it from there after you've gotten it in place on that particular unit. And then that unit can kind of become a training site or a model for the rest of the facility where staff maybe can kind of rotate through to that unit to see, oh, this is how we do it. This is how it's done. Because I know, so you had some staff coming from other units at Jewish Home or even the other Jewish Home campus to look at the program in the GZ building, right?
That's correct. They've implemented our programs to some degree over here in our Factor building, which it's different to some degree, as each facility will tweak this program to meet the needs of the resident, which is really a decreased weight loss. That's our common goal here.
Right.
I think however a facility manages to meet these needs, it'll be facility by facility, because behaviors are different and routines are different.
Right. And even unit to unit, because some facilities will kind of divide residents up into particular units based on their care needs.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a chance and unmute everybody. I may wind up muting everybody all again. But I'm going to unmute everybody.
You have unmuted your line.
And you are now free without any barrier to ask a question.
I have a question.
Thanks. Go ahead.
In your program, you said that the families can help to transport residents. I was really surprised that you didn't say the family member could feed a resident, even a resident who may be very difficult to feed, because they've been feeding them at home and they come to the facility. They certainly know how to handle the resident better than anyone else. So I was surprised that you didn't say them, and not that they don't have to go through the feeding aid process, because they've already been able to feed their resident for a long time at home.
That's right.
Good
yeah,
question.
That's an excellent point, and you're absolutely right. Family members can be wonderful during meal times, as well as, you know, family members will often bring in, you know, foods and fluids from home for their relative between meals. So the only reason I didn't mention it is because the benefit of the family is specific to just those residents who happen to have family members who are involved enough, and you know that they consistently come. And family members typically, while they might be there, you know, for one meal a day at most, you don't have too many residents where it's a routine thing that you can count on for multiple meals across multiple days in a given week. But absolutely, if you've got certain residents who, you know that they routinely have family present during meals, then you're absolutely correct that they can be great in that capacity, and they don't have to go through the federal, you know, the formal training.
Sandra?
Yes.
Anne LeClaire has just joined me.
Oh, great.
And just in reference to the families, in reference to our families feeding, that's a great resource. It is a fine line, and each facility will have its regulations in reference to regulations and liability. So depending on that and what you work out with the families, but yes, it's an extremely, it's a very valuable tool to utilize our family members in this process.
Thank you for pointing that out. And our questioner, other questions? Again, most lines are unmuted, as you can kind of hear.
What responsibilities would you give hydration aides to make it fill up their 8-hour shift?
If they're solely hydration aides, then well, clearly they can, and they don't have other responsibilities, then absolutely they can not only extend their offers of fluids between meals to, you know, snacks through then fluids, as well as supplements for residents who prefer supplements between meals. And then, you know, they're a wonderful additional staffing resource for mealtime too. So, I mean, they can be utilized, you know, fixed, you know, multiple times a day, both during and between meals. And they can even, we've even trained hydration techs in how to do observations during meals and chart documentation of percent. So that's something else that they can help with. They can help with the initial assessments of identifying residents who are eating poorly during meals. That is not at all something that has to be limited to a licensed nurse level staff. We've taught every level of staff how to do that, including nurse aides.
Thank you. I have a question. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Yes, we can.
Can volunteers be trained through the feeding program, the 8-hour training, if we meet criteria? Can non-paid staff fill
yes.
that role?
Yes, they can. It's kind of a misnomer. I mean, the regulation is technically called the paid feeding assistant regulation, but that was just, they don't have to be paid staff. Absolutely, volunteers can go through the required 8-hour training curricula that's state approved, and they can absolutely help with both mealtime feeding assistance and between meal snack delivery. And for facilities who have, you know, fairly significant active volunteer programs, that's another great resource.
Thank you. Other questions? These have been great. Okay. I want to thank you, Susan and Ann and Sandy, for a wonderful teleconference. Thank you all, and thank you all for joining us.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much, Susan. Thank you, Ann.
You're welcome.
I hope you guys are well.
We are. And you?
Yes, good. Thanks.
Good. Stay in touch.
We will. We miss you guys.
Thanks. We miss you.
Thanks for joining us. It helped promote some discussion. Appreciate it very much.
Let us know if there's anything else we can do for you.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.